Welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. By the way, this music you're listening to is the music of Anthrax, and Scott Ian will be Bobby Dooley's guest in a future Bobby Dooley podcast, the Bobby Dooley podcast. And Bobby Dooley's available as of today with a new episode 55 of the Bobby Dooley podcast. I think she's talking about what, Margaret?
Well, she's talking about a Super Bowl party and some biker and...
And what?
Well, I don't want to say it on the air. It's rather disgusting, to be honest with you.
Talk about the guys.
No, don't say it.
Yes, well, she was talking about the guys, and then going out into the garage with the guy and then taking off on his motorcycle.
Well, they had a Super Bowl party at the Dooley's. Okay. And I think that had to do with the size of someone's...
Well, don't say it, Phil.
Television, I was going to say. The size of a guy's television. The wide... Actually, it was a woman.
Yes, it was one of her circle of taste. Some of these nattering... Those women and their circle of taste, they've got all the taste, I think, of Ben Fagan in Oliver. You know, the dirty, filthy old pederast? What are you looking at, bud?
Ben Fagan.
In Oliver Twist, the dirty old man.
All right.
You know, I love working with people that read.
All right, well, I think the point is made that she has no taste. Okay, so welcome back here, folks, to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Yeah, the Super Bowl was, forget about whether or not we actually watched it. The good news is there wasn't much to miss, because, man, was that a rout. Woo, baby. And to join us and talk a little bit about the ball game, we had him on, of course, on Friday talking about what he thought would happen, and by God, it did happen. Doug Danger has joined us here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We also will have Vernon Dozier back in, and Steve Bozell. You know, Bud, you guys got preempted because of the Time Warner failing. But Doug Danger joining us online. Doug, you predicted a 50-10 score in favor of the Seahawks. It was 43-8.
You know, when I talk about being a gay man and a gay journalist and having the perception and ability to look into a certain set of circumstances based upon the fact that I had been discriminated against, and therefore I have sharpened or honed my ability to look into a situation, I felt I was on very, very firm ground when I predicted that the Seahawks would wipe the floor up with the Denver Broncos, and I was very, very right about that. From the beginning, I felt that the Seattle Seahawks had it in them to make this a memorable Super Bowl. But more to the point, I felt they had it in them to humiliate and to take. And I'm second to none in my admiration for Peyton Manning. I think he's obviously an all-star quarterback. And this is the guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame. There's no question about that. And he's a guy that is going to be hailed for years to come as one of the greats, right up there with Montana, right up there with Unitas, right up there with all of the great quarterbacks. But in this football game yesterday, there's no question in my mind that the Seahawks were going to go into that stadium and they were going to make it their personal business to wipe and clean every filthy nook and cranny of MetLife Stadium with Peyton Manning, using every portion of him to wipe and mop up and sop up the filth of that place, just to prove a point.
Now, you sound as if you enjoyed seeing Peyton Manning get beaten badly, because I don't hear in you the voice of someone who is admiring Peyton Manning.
Well, now, wait a minute.
No, I've got to agree with that.
Now, hold on.
I do, too.
Well, what do you mean you do, too?
It sounds like you're glorying in Peyton Manning losing as bad as he did.
I don't know where you're getting that.
Well, you're talking about them wiping up every filthy nook and cranny.
Well, that was the Seattle Seahawks. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. You're aware of that, right? Right, Margaret?
Yes, I'm aware of it, Doug, obviously. But you're talking about mopping the filth up at MetLife Stadium with Peyton, every inch of Peyton Manning. That doesn't sound like admiration for Peyton Manning.
Well, I can assure you I have nothing but the greatest admiration for that great quarterback, for that terrific athlete. But you saw the game. We all saw the game. We all know what happened. Was I wrong?
Look, Doug.
Whoa, Sunshine. Was I wrong?
Don't you dare call me Sunshine. I'm not one of your cronies there around the water cooler.
Was I wrong, Phil?
No, you were not wrong. But you sound like you enjoy the fact that Peyton Manning got beat badly.
I don't enjoy it any more than I enjoyed. I don't enjoy it, to be honest with you, Margaret. Please don't get angry. I don't enjoy it any more than I enjoyed talking to Margaret. You know.
Well, then I'll get up and leave.
No, wait a minute.
She's leaving.
Thank you.
what a baby.
Why do you call me a baby when you insult me?
What?
What? Never mind.
Like a pill. You know.
Well, Doug, what do you expect if you're going to say something like that?
I'm telling you that because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, I get punished. She's punishing me for being gay. You know?
Hold on for a minute. Why do you say that?
Because I'm right with my prediction that the Seattle Seahawks would take the Denver Broncos out to the woodshed and spank their asses in the hamburger. I'm sorry to put it that way. I'm sorry to humiliate you. I'm sorry to humiliate Bronco fans, but the Seattle Seahawks beat the Denver Broncos with a nail-studded board on the ass.
Okay, Doug, we get it.
I mean, well, you know, but because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist and I'm able to see things straight on and clearly, Margaret wants to punish me for that. She says I'm all, you know, bad and everything like that.
I'm not saying because you're gay. I'm simply saying that you don't have to insult me and the listeners with this seeming respect for Peyton Manning while you say that they wiped every nook and cranny of MetLife Stadium up with him.
Well, they did. You can say what you want, but they did. The Seattle Seahawks took the reputation of Peyton Manning in the biggest game in pro football, the Super Bowl. They took his reputation and they wiped their crotches with it. Thank you and good night.
What? Why is he hanging up?
I think he's mad.
Well, good. I'm glad he did hang up because he ought to be ashamed of himself.
Well, there's no need, Doug, if you're listening, to hang up. I mean, you've got a strong opinion. Margaret has a strong opinion. Why are you hanging up?
Doug, this is General Shaw. Now, I agree with Phil. You have a strong, although his opinion is very insulting.
No, I think he needs to be more respectful. You know.
Look, when have you ever known Doug to worry about being respectful when he's got his, quote, truth to tell? You know, that's the thing about Doug, man. He's all about his truth, so. All right, Doug Danger.
Yeah, Doug. Yeah.
Bud, just put him on the air. I want to hear you off the air talking to him.
Yeah, I got to put you on the air. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Here.
Like I told that guy, you know, but he's some sissy from down Birmingham way.
Doug, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Yeah, look, I was just talking to Bud about Jerry Rimshot, who's a sports writer at Alabama. He's in the Southeast. He covers the Southeastern Conference. And I told him, I said, you mark my words. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. He said, look, you know, I come from the Southeast, and I'm trying to be open-minded. I'm trying to be broad-minded about these things, Doug. Every time you say you're gay, it makes it harder and harder for me to, you know, get you in a press box for an Alabama game. I said, I could care less if I'm never in a press box for an Alabama game. You try and tell me the anti-gay? Say no.
And all right, Doug, what's your point?
My point is this. I told him, I said, you watch, the Seattle Seahawks are going to take the Denver Broncos, and they're going to slap their face a couple of times backwards and forwards and then, you know, push them down onto a bed, theoretically, and have their... I'm talking theoretically.
All right, well, but we saw what happened. They got their ass kicked, and you were right. And I think the reason why I've got you on the show is because you were damn close to predicting the score.
What score did you predict, Doug?
I said 50-10, Seattle over Denver. It was 43-8.
Ha ha, you're way off.
What? Man, I tell you, Dickman, you're dumb, but did I ever want to believe you're as dumb as you are right now? No.
What? What do you mean, way off?
Well, he said 43-8.
No, he didn't. He said 50-10. The final score was 43-8. He missed the winning score by 7 points, the losing score by 2. I'd say that's pretty damn good.
You better believe it. And I'll tell you another thing. My good, close, personal friend, Vernon Dozier, the high school football coach from Glendale, California, man, he took the dog outside and did all kinds of nasty things to it on this one. He couldn't pick his rear end or his nose on this one.
All right, well, we're going to have Coach Dozier on here in a second to talk with you, Doug. And yes, Coach Dozier did miss his prediction. He picked the Denver Broncos 57-0. So,
well, it sounded to me. I remember when they were on Friday, and it was a big peeing match. That's what it was. It was a pee match. Excuse me.
Jeez.
Boy, I'll tell you.
All right, we're going to be back here. Vernon Dozier will be with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we will continue discussing. We'll continue discussing the results of the game, and I would say the very uncanny ability of Doug Danger to pick the correct score. Phil Hendry Show. It's the world. world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Vernon Dozier going to join us. And then I want to get to this story of the guy that claims to have survived a year at sea. This man's name, Jose Salvador Albarengo. Did you hear about this? He washed ashore, or he drifted ashore, or he got on shore somehow last Thursday. And officials in the Marshall Islands are, they want to verify this guy's story. You know, they want to find out, let's just hold on for a second here before we start giving you the Tom Hanks Castaway Award, man. Just exactly what happened. All right, Vernon Dozier joining us from Glendale, California. Vernon, just heard Doug Danger. Doug didn't accurately, but he came very close to predicting the correct score last Friday on our show. He said 50-10 Seattle. It was 43-8. Obviously, your pick of 57-0 wasn't even close. What do you think?
Well, first of all, if you could go back and listen to the tape, when I said 57-0, I was simply reacting to what I thought was a ridiculous claim. He said 17-15. Do you remember that, Doug, at all? 17-15?
Yeah, I do remember that. And you said, well, how can it be 15? Well, you know, that would mean a field goal and a safety.
But my point is, you picked a close game.
I did pick a close game, but I had another look at it. I heard how you were protesting against the score that I had picked, and I thought, boy, you know what I really think? I think that I don't like what you're saying about my original pick, so I think I'm going to go and just say they're going to butcher him alive, and they did.
Yeah, well, but that was a wild guess. That wasn't based on any knowledge of football.
Oh, is that right? And what was your prediction based on your 57-0?
If you remember, my original prediction was 43-3, or, well...
Yeah, see, your original prediction sucked just as bad as my original prediction. So we got to go to the secondary prediction. And my secondary prediction was absolutely beautiful. Yours sucked more. So, you see what I'm saying? In other words...
I don't see what you're saying. What I hear is a bunch of rules you're laying down here after the fact about how my pick was rotten. It was a rotten pick, and your pick was cool, you know. And you're right. Your pick was cool, and mine was rotten. But it wasn't rotten because I don't know football, and your pick wasn't good because you know football. Your pick was good because you just...
What, I got lucky? What, did the gay guy get lucky? Is that it?
I didn't say anything about you being gay.
Don't be unfair, Doug. He didn't mention you being gay.
Well, I mean, look, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I told you the reason why I was correct with my pick is because of my gay perception. All right?
What do you mean your gay perception? You know I'm never going to buy into that, your gay perception. I think you have perception like everybody else, and I think it was a lucky guess.
All right, so let's say my guess was a lucky guess. Now, what do you base your original pick of the Broncos destroying the Seattle Seahawks 43-3, I think you said. What do you base that on?
I base that on, you know something, that would have happened if.
Yeah, if. Yeah, here we go with the if.
Hold on for a minute, will you? That would have happened if Peyton Manning had a football team that did not choke like schoolgirls. When he takes him to this guy took him to the Super Bowl. They played a great playoffs. They were poised. They were primed. They were sweet. They were tight. They looked good. They smelled good. Now they get into the Super Bowl.
What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about how the Denver Broncos set up in this game as opposed to Seattle. They were looking sweet and fine. If the Denver Broncos were a female, they would have had the biggest breasts and the finest looking ass of each. Well.
What does that mean?
No kidding. What does that mean? Now, you talk about me being gay.
Hey, let me tell you something, man. It's got nothing to... I'm trying to give you a relatable image, okay?
Yeah, but you're talking about the Denver Broncos were... What you're telling me is they were the better prepared of the two teams.
I'm saying that the Denver Broncos of the two teams, yeah, were the better-looking Super Bowl team. If the Denver... All right, let me put it this way. If the Denver Broncos were a baby, they would have had pink cheeks... And a healthy giggle and no drool. Does that make sense?
No, it does not, man.
Hey, Vernon, what is it with you and if it was a baby?
What do you mean, what is it? You're trying to make me sound like I'm nuts.
No, you already sound nuts. What do you mean if the Denver Broncos were a baby and it had pink cheeks?
I'm telling you, if the Denver Broncos were a baby, it wouldn't be crapping in its diaper. If the Denver Broncos were a baby, there'd be no crap in the diaper. it would be laughing, and its cheeks would be pink, and it would belch, and it would like being thrown in the air. If the Seattle Seahawks were a baby, it would be screaming its guts loose and diarrhea everywhere.
Yeah, okay, that's fine, man, but guess who won?
Yeah, the baby with diarrhea. So as it turns out...
As it turns out what? As it turns out the baby, the Seattle Seahawk baby was healthy?
As it turns out, the Seattle Seahawk baby got healthy, and the Denver Bronco baby suddenly took sick.
Oh, will you get out of here, man? You know something, Coach? You just can't say you're wrong, and you hate like hell to be wrong when you're in competition with some gay writer for an Orange County newspaper. That's the part that's driving you nuts. I was right. You were wrong, Coach. I'll give you this. I think you're too distracted from planning for next season's football campaign with Belmar Academy to even concentrate on the Super Bowl. All right, well, I'll take that.
Your analogies are really out there, man. I mean, if the Denver Broncos were a baby...
Well, hold on for a minute. What's wrong with that? I tried to draw a picture as clear as I can for my team, for the people on the radio, for your show, Phil, for everybody. I'm simply saying the Denver Broncos, if they were, for instance, let's say the Denver Broncos...
All right, no more analogies, a beautiful woman or a baby.
No, hold on. What if the Denver Broncos were a... Just a pair of underwear. Just something as simple as that, a pair of underwear.
Oh, okay. If the Denver Broncos were a pair of underwear, there'd be no skid marks.
Goodbye.
Hello? Okay, Doug?
Yeah.
All right, so you're the last man standing.
Well, I figured as much. I mean, look, you know, I admire the coach. I think the coach has done a great job, in, not only with his teams, but also on your program. But I don't know, maybe it's because he is a teacher, he uses these ridiculous comparisons. If the Denver Broncos were a pair of underwear and all I said was there'd be no skid marks and he hangs up.
Yeah, I don't know why he hung up either. Do you know, Bud?
Yeah, I talked to him later. He said if the Denver Broncos was a pair of underwear, they'd fit.
You know, I think he needs a psychiatrist or something, if you want my honest opinion.
Yeah, I ditto.
I think that the coach needs to get in and talk to somebody. You know.
Well, why do you say that, Phil? I think that's very unfair for Coach Dozier. He's had a wonderful season himself.
That's fine, but what is it with if the coach? You see, there comes a point where a guy's just working too hard, and I think Coach Dozier's one of these guys that has a cot in the office.
Oh, this guy's burning the midnight oil.
Oh yeah, he's got a cot in the office and the chalkboard. All right, listen, Doug. Thank you very much. Congratulations on your pick, and we'll be looking for your column next week in the Orange County Courier.
Uh-huh.
Doug Danger, folks. Gay man and gay journalist, and
he picked the winning score was 43-8. He said 50-10.
He said 50-10 would be the final Seattle, and he was damn close. And I'll tell you, if Doug Danger were a baby, he'd be fat and pink and happy and not drooling with no diarrhea.
Yeah, Coach Dozier, he'd be a baby with a dirty diaper.
Exactly. I don't know, man. All right, so coming up, Jose Salvador Alvarengo. Here's a guy with a tale of survival on the ocean that you're going to find fascinating. The question is it true? Did it actually happen? Did this cat experience the very things that he says he experienced? We're going to find out here when we come back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. But first, this from the Phil Henry Show website. You know, with a backstage pass, and that is a subscription to our website, whether a month, 6 months, or a full year, you have access to more hours of probably the most original radio show that has ever been heard than you have access to any hours of any other radio show. You know, one Phil Henry Show is worth about 20 of any other guys. That's how hard we work around here, and we've got over 15 years of full radio shows in our archives. We also have our video cast archive. We also have a miscellaneous archives of webcasts that we've done, television pilots we've done, interviews we've done on TV and radio and in print. And we have our news feed. And it's all there on our daily show log as well at philhenryshow.com. And once you go through all of that, you visit our online store and you can pick up a hat, a T-shirt, Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie, Bobby Dooley keychains. We got coffee mugs. We got shot glasses. And we have a collection of our classic best of CDs, and these are going fast. Once we're out of the hard copy of all of these, man, we are completely out of the best of CDs. We do have our downloads, and it's all there at philhenryshow.com. So head on over until the 15th of February, if you buy a year's subscription to the Phil Henry Show website, you get a free year. A free year, and that is a gift subscription that you can give to a Valentine. So it's our way of celebrating Valentine's Day. We're kind of a rough and tumble crew here. You know, we smell, we drink too much beer, but we do have romantic hearts. The very essence of us is romance. And so one free year you get for a year's subscription to give to your Valentine. Check it out at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Back with a tale, maybe fishy, maybe not, of Jose Salvador Alberengo.
Yeah!
All right. Welcome back to world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and glad to have you with us here. We're going to talk to you here about Jose Salvador Alberengo, but I was just talking to the crew here off air about the one-man show that we debuted in San Francisco, and it's going to evolve, and by the time you see it again here in Southern California, it will be slightly different, and I think we did 90 minutes, you know.
Now, you did 90 minutes, Phil, but at the end of that 90 minutes, you looked like you were going to drop into a, just a, into a lump, and I, you know I love you, Phil, but into a lump of stinking laundry.
Well, yeah, Phil, because you'd been stinking it up.
What do you mean stinking it up?
On account of you were sweating.
Well, sure I was sweating, but I do use underarm, antiperspirant.
Well,
all right, whatever you say.
Well, okay, sorry if there was, but I can tell you, I don't think there was. I'm a very fastidious guy. But yeah, I did 90 minutes, and I was supposed to only do an hour. And so you guys in San Francisco at the Sketch Fest, you owe me. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm joking. It was. I'm glad that we went 90. So anyway, having said all of that, it's fun. I like doing it, and we want to do more of it. I don't know why it is, but that seems to be a format that, if you can call it a format, being on the radio I like, and being on a stage I like, being on a live stage. I'm not necessarily saying on TV in front of a camera, you know, but I'm saying on a stage with the audience right there.
Well, you like the immediate response of the audience. You like the synergy, right, Phil?
Yeah, you know.
Yes, you like the synergy. And
well, Margaret, why do you have to accentuate the word? We know what it means.
You may know what it means, but I'm accentuating it. So you not only have the word's meaning, you also have the electricity of the word. The word is very electric. Okay?
Yeah, but
well, wait, bud. The word is very electric. And so when Phil is on stage and he has the synergy, you see?
Yeah, you're all going weird.
No, bud, the only one going weird around here is you.
No, you're right, Margaret. Thank you. You're right. I have the synergy.
Well, don't be sarcastic.
Look, Margaret, when you say things the way you say them, you're opening yourself up for all kinds of sarcasm, you know?
Margaret, you're saying that word like you yourself are trying to get over a stroke, and it's some sort of mouth therapy.
Mouth therapy? Did I hear you say that?
Yes, you're going synergy as if there's a nurse holding your hand while you're trying to do the word.
Excuse me.
Oh, God.
Do you need water? Yes, I do.
Let me help you.
No, get away from me.
All right.
God, Margaret, don't talk to him that way.
I don't want him in the kitchen with me, all alone.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, here is the guy's story. His name, Jose Salvador Alberengo. His survival tale is the stuff of a Hollywood script. Adrift and alone on the ocean for more than a year, the 37-year-old castaway says he survived by eating turtles, birds, and sharks that he caught with his bare hands during an incredible voyage from Mexico to a remote coral atoll in the Marshall Islands. That's a journey of 12,500 kilometers, maybe 9,000 miles, 10,000 miles, something like that. He told his rescuers he would catch small sharks by dangling one arm into the water and using it as bait. As a shark closed in, he would grab its tail and haul it onto his 7.3-meter fiberglass boat. His story, recounted after he washed ashore clad only in ragged underpants on Thursday last week, sounds almost too incredible to be true. And at least one official in the Marshall Islands wants to verify Alberengo's account before he swallows the survival tale hook, line, and sinker.
That's pretty good, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I bet the guy wrote it like that.
Yeah, of course they do. They always write it like that. You want to make it sound like it's all about the fish and everything?
All right, thank you, guys. We're on the air, okay?
Sorry.
For one thing, Alberengo appeared to be too well-fed, said Guy Bing, the acting secretary of foreign affairs for the Marshall Islands, who met with Alberengo on Monday. Boy, only in a country like the Marshall Islands where will the acting secretary of foreign affairs meet a castaway or a guy that's washed up on shore, because that's what passes for a foreign dignitary in a country like that.
That's good, Phil.
Thank you. So,
when you say foreign dignitary, you mean the guy washing on the shore?
Yes. So, Mr. Bing said, quote, "It does sound like an incredible story, and I'm not sure if I believe his story." So at least one man has openly said, "Guess what, Mr. Alberengo? You're full of it." When we saw him, he was not only, he was not really thin compared to other survivors in the past. I have some doubts. Once we start communicating with where he's from, we'll be able to find out more information. U.S. Ambassador Thomas Armbruster, who is acting as an interpreter for Marshall Islands authorities, also has some doubts about the story. Mr. Armbruster said the fisherman told him that he was originally from El Salvador, but he'd been living in Mexico for 15 years before his epic voyage. He said he's a shrimp and shark fisherman, Mr. Armbruster said. He looked better than one would expect. Well, about 1,000 curious onlookers crowded around the dock at the Marshall Islands capital of Majuro on Monday for a glimpse of the long-haired fisherman, who smiled and waved briefly before he was whisked away for medical checkup at Majuro Hospital. Sporting a bushy beard and clutching a can of Coke, he was helped down the gangplank of a police patrol boat after a 22-hour trip from Ebon Atoll, the southernmost cluster of coral islands in the Marshalls, where he washed ashore after apparently setting sail from Mexico on the 24th of December, 2012. Wow. Eric von Sabiel, an ocean circulation expert at the University of Northern of NSW, New Zealand. Is that North, South, New South Wales? Is that NSW?
I don't know. I think that would be North...
That's north-southwest.
Yes, that's north-southwest.
What do you mean north-southwest?
Well, isn't that what NSW means?
Well, to me, it means north, new...
You're talking about New South Wales? Where's that?
It's in Wales.
No, it ain't. It's in Australia, man, New South Wales. It's a province of ours, a state of Australia. So he said he had an answer to doubts that the castaway's amazing tale of survival is true. He said, quote, "It's garbage. Tracking of what happens to rubbish..." He says garbage is what helps tell the tale. "Tracking of what happens to rubbish, such as plastics tossed or washed into the sea, suggests a drifting boat from Mexico could have made its way to the Marshall Islands. I think his story is correct, at least as far as the science of ocean currents goes," said Dr. Van Sabiel. "It would take about 1 to 2 years, approximately, to drift all the way across the Pacific," he said. "As it was, the castaway was lucky to make landfall because of his next and final stop would probably have been the giant floating garbage patch in the North Pacific between Hawaii and California. If he would not have had the fortune to hit a beach, then he probably would have ended up in the garbage patch."
Why that?
Well, it's going clockwise, isn't it, the current? So it would have sucked him up north into the middle of this big garbage patch, which has gotten even more garbagey since the tsunami and all of that stuff that washed ashore. I told you about my neighbor, right?
Well, this is the guy that says he ran into a boat. Yeah, sure.
Now, wait a minute. He didn't say he ran into a boat.
I mean a bus.
Yeah, well, he didn't say he ran into the bus. He said a friend of his did, you know.
Yeah, they always say it's a friend of theirs.
Well, so what is it? All of a sudden, everybody's full of crap when they say that they've had some outrageous or unlikely experience at sea? Who knows? This guy may be telling the truth. We live in such a skeptical age now. Everybody suspects everybody of pulling a fast one. You know, everyone thinks that everybody's circulating that picture of Bill Gates. I put a picture on the Facebook page the other day, and it was a picture of the moon. And I said, as we all know, this is made of green cheese, and now NASA is making it available to you this one time only, right into NASA and get a piece of the green cheese that came from the moon.
Are you telling, and what do you think people are going to do?
Based upon what I have learned over the last month or so on Facebook, I bet a good number of them will, about half of them. You know, you can't... See, here's the thing. Not only are a lot of people stupid, But now they get really angry because they think that you tricked them. So in other words, if you say, for instance, you know, there's zombies loose and they're eating faces down in Miami, they're going to believe that. We've got grown adults in this country that believe in zombies. And they'll get angry and probably even violent if you tell them we were only kidding. That's how dumb. And I remember someone saying once,
well, Phil, you shouldn't call those people dumb.
Oh, yes, I will call them dumb.
Well, wait a minute, Phil. That's cruel of you.
No, they're dumb. There's no other way. You got to say it. Or you're going to, what are we supposed to do now, man? Do some dance of sensitivity around people that are just, that believe in zombies? That believe in cannibal zombies? No way. No way. And you know, it's been said that the gap between the dumbest of us and the smartest is ever widening. You know, if you don't stay up to speed on what's happening technologically, informationally, etc., you're getting lost in the shuffle, man. And now I got people that are expecting Bill Gates to be giving away money for free, the moon made of green cheese, and flesh-eating zombies. All of this exists, and if you tell them that you're kidding, they don't look in the mirror and say, boy, what a schmuck I am. They get mad at you. And here's the other thing they pitch. They like to pitch this one. Man, rich people are always putting it over on the poor people. No, that's not true. Smart rich people are always putting it over on dumb poor people, but I would say that it's probably the opposite if you're meeting a really smart poor guy and a really dumb rich guy. So, no, it ain't got nothing to do with rich and poor. It's got to do with smart and dumb, more or less. All right. So this guy says he would have wound up in a garbage patch as we talk about this guy, Alberengo. Foreign Ministry officials said Alberengo told them during a debriefing that he was a 37-year-old whose full name was Jose Salvador Alberengo. He said he lived in Tapachula near the Mexican border with Guatemala and worked for a company named Camaronera de la Costa. Ain't that shrimp?
Yes, Camaron is a shrimp.
So Alberengo said he was on a shark fishing expedition with a youth named Ixel when strong winds blew them off course and they became lost in December 2012. He said the boy, described as 15 to 18 years old, died a few weeks into the ordeal because he could not eat raw bird meat. The surviving fisherman was found disoriented and clad only in ragged underpants last Thursday after a 7.3-meter fiberglass boat floated onto a reef. Unable to speak English, he communicated to his rescuers through pictures and gestures that he'd survived the 12,500-kilometer odyssey by eating turtles, birds, and fish and drinking turtle blood when there was no rain. He told the Telegraph in London that he had no idea where the Marshall Islands were. His first words upon spotting land, "Oh, God, I just killed a bird to eat and saw some trees," he said. "I cried, oh, God, I got to land and had a mountain of sleep." I read the logbook of William Bligh when they were cast away by Fletcher Christian, and he had something like 18 men on this launch, and they survived 3,000 miles across the South Pacific. They survived 3,000 miles, and it was about a three-month voyage, I think, but it wasn't a year. But they did survive on rainwater. They survived on birds they caught. They survived on some fish they were able to catch. And they survived on the blood of these birds that they drank. So we know of these tales of survival, but we certainly don't know them in modern times, because how many people get shipwrecked or cast away in a day and age of GPS, air traffic, coast guards, all kinds of search and rescue operations. It's very, very unlikely. We'll be back with a conclusion to this magnificent tale and more on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Ahoy! Land ho! Land ho! Land ho! Hey, it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. We're talking about this guy, Alberengo. You know, these stories of being lost at sea or any story having to do with the ocean, some tall tale from the ocean, unless you've got photographs and another account. I mean, they're really hard to prove, you know.
Well, what about this one you're talking about just moments ago about the guy and the woman in Hawaii?
Oh, I remember that. Phil, you never believed that. I thought that was terrible of you. That was a terribly heartbreaking story.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
But when was that, Mr. Henry?
This story that Margaret bought
Don't make it sound like I'm the imbecile. You're the one that won't believe that true love will.
Oh, well, wait. Hold. What do you mean true love will? Hold the phone. This guy goes to Hawaii. This is a true story. I read the news, and I kept reading to see if there was a follow-up on this thing, because you got to be kidding me with this story. This guy and his new bride go to Hawaii for their honeymoon, right? They rent a boat or something, I think a sailboat or some damn thing, to go sailing out between Maui and that island across from Maui that the Navy used to use for gunnery practice. I forget the name of the island now. Can somebody look that up for me? And they, while in this boat overnight, something happens because the next morning, the boat drifts ashore on this Navy island with only the guy in it. And he gets out of the boat and he uses one of these phones. There's a phone box, I guess a series of these phone boxes on the island that the naval gunnery guys would use to call in these artillery strikes, etc. And he uses this to communicate to Maui and say, I have drifted ashore. I lost my wife overnight. She was attacked by a shark. She bled to death, and I put her body in the water, and it just drifted away. And it was so terribly heartbreaking, and I fell asleep, and I washed up on shore.
And you think that's bullcrap?
Are you kidding me or something? And they had to believe this? That sounds like the biggest load I've ever heard in my life. You want to know why? First of all, if your wife gets bit by a shark, and even if she bleeds to death, you're not going to just dump her body in the drink, for God's sake. What is that? You know? You're going to at least hold on to the body for some, just to prove what you're saying is right, and on top of everything else, how about a funeral? How about the proper internment of this poor woman after such a horrific ordeal? But no, this guy says that he just, I didn't know what else to do, and I just let her drift away, and then he fell asleep. Are you going to get one minute of sleep after something like that happens to you? I'd be awake all night trying to flag down a ship, something. I know that, I shouldn't use myself as an example.
Yeah, you can't use yourself, Mr. Henry, on account of you're weird.
Oh, am I that weird, man, that I'm that much different from normal people?
Well, you don't know, Phil. The weirdness, you're pretty weird.
Wait a minute. Are you going to sleep after you lose your wife?
If I'm tired, yes. It depends, Phil. If it's been a long ordeal and I got to bag some Z's.
Oh, get out of here. So anyway, that's what they had to believe. They retrieved this guy from this island. Well, what happened? My wife was with me. We rented this boat. She got bit by a shark. She bled to death. And I never read anything about this guy being charged with any crime. And, of course, with no body, you can prosecute a murder even if you don't have a body. It's not true that you must have a body in order to prosecute somebody for murder. You don't have to. You can collect a mountain of circumstantial evidence, in fact, and convict somebody of murder. But it's a tough one to do. It's a tough, from what I understand, watching all the investigation discovery that I watch.
Phil, investigation, aren't you embarrassed saying, oh, according to investigation discovery?
No, not at all. Why should I be?
Well, it's not, you don't sound like you've hung out with cops or anything.
I haven't hung out with that many cops. I watch TV.
So that's where you get all your information.
Absolutely. And according to the TV that I watch, Beaver Cleaver,
Yeah, Beaver Cleaver lives in Springfield, same town as the Simpsons.
All right. Anyway, there, nothing came of it. The guy was, we're awfully sorry to hear that. See you later. Thank you. I think the guy was from India or something.
From India?
Yeah, he was. I think they were an Indian couple. And off he went. And that was it. I haven't heard anything since. No arrest, no nothing. And I that the cops in Hawaii are probably, they don't buy it, but what are they supposed to do?
Well, if you say you don't need a body, why didn't they begin to investigate thoroughly and vigorously?
Well, what are you going to do, man? I mean, where do you start? There's got to be some kind of evidence leading up to it. Was there an argument? Is there a will? Is there a life insurance policy? Was there violence in the family? I mean, you know what I'm saying? And I don't think they had any of that stuff. And they don't even have a body. And they got to take his word for all this stuff? Man, I'll tell you, that's the perfect murder.
Well, I don't think there must be something else. You look into it, because I refuse to believe that some jackball gets away with murder with a flimsy premise like that.
I'm telling you that that's all that there was. Now, maybe there's been something since that I missed.
I'll bet you anything there was.
Well, if there was, I'd like to find it, because I didn't hear anything about it after that. And I looked for a long time, and it was the biggest load of horse dung. I didn't buy it at all. Now, this guy that drifted onto the shore there of the Marshall Islands, there's a dead kid now. Now we find out he was with a kid that was 15 to 18 years of age, and the kid's dead. Now, what's his last name? And where'd he come from? And was he a member of this guy's crew? Were they co-employees of somebody else? Is there a family missing this kid? This guy's story, you're going to find out real fast whether this guy's telling the truth or not. And if he's lying, I got money that says it's got something to do with him killing this kid. What do you think?
Phil, quit acting like you're Sherlock Holmes, all right?
Wait, you want me to start looking into this stuff, and this guy says there's a kid that's dead.
Yeah, I agree with Mr. Henry. Maybe the guy strangled a kid or something and used him for shark bait or something like that.
Yeah, might have used the kid for bait to stay alive.
What are you two clowns talking? What do you mean used him for bait to stay alive? Why, that's the largest load of hogwash. Man, the stink of that coming off the hogs you're washing. Friend, you'll never get those hogs clean with that kind of hogwash. What are you laughing at?
Go get some water, will you? All right. So anyway, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being a part of this magnificent radio show this evening. I hope it was as fun for you as it was for us. We'll be back tomorrow night. Visit us online at philhenryshow.com. Remember, to the 15th, you can buy a year free and get a gift subscription free. It's our Valentine's special, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
4, 3, 2, 1.